Hello, my name is Susanne. Welcome to the 20th episode of Handmade, from the life of a knitting, singing, writing spinner. This is the grand second English edition, as you're hearing. I think I can drop the German announcement in the English episode. For anybody who doesn't understand this, I think they will. So, yeah, it's been more than a year. I hadn't expected this. This means I only did like 9 episodes throughout the past year. Longer than a year even. So, I have a lot of things to talk about, because, while I haven't been knitting and spinning, well, I spun a lot, but I haven't been knitting as much as the years before. More than a year is a lot of time. So, my show notes, I have to warn you in advance, are like 3 pages long. And I might cut this episode into 2 parts, but, well, you see when that happens. So what I've been knitting and spinning, there was the ebony turtleneck sweater. I think I talked about that already in the first English episode. So that has been going on for a long time. It's finished. I'm pretty happy with it. And I'll tell you all about that sweater in, the other segment where there's the actual topics of what I've been talking about in the podcast throughout the past month. For those of you who don't know, my English episodes are like, I want to say best of episodes, but they're not really best of. They're like everything I talked about in the past 9 episodes in German, for those of you who don't understand German. So there's that. I also finished the maple wing shawl. I love it. I have worn it only once or twice, but that was to be expected, as it's bright green. It doesn't really go with anything I own, and I haven't been wearing my shawls a lot this year. I don't quite know why. First of all, it wasn't all that cold throughout the winter, and the other thing is that I seem to be totally sensitive with wool on my neck. I can't stand it this year. All of a sudden, I can't wear all of my woolen shawls and stoles. I hope that will change again next year. So for the moment, I'm contemplating spinning silk and knitting silk shawls instead. But I love the maple wings. It felt like it took a long time, but I think I looked it up and it wasn't all that long of a time. Only, you know, I thought it would be a good thing starting the shawl at the bottom where it's the widest. It's like one of those Faroes shawls. And you start it at the bottom. And I thought, oh, yeah. So when I'm all motivated and starting, I can knit the part where it's widest and the rows are the longest. Well, it turned out really the other way around, from top to bottom suits me better. I don't know why. It took ages, but I finished it. I like it. I made a pair of socks for my husband called Vincent. I think that was because of the colorway, and I have no idea what pattern I used. It was a cookie pattern, I'm sure of that. Maybe I'll put a picture of these socks into the show notes. They were, I don't really remember much about them. What I know is that he has already worn a heel through the, a hole through the heel, and I have to darn them. But other than that, he loves them. He obviously wore them a lot, and I'll darn them, and then they'll be ready again. I also made a few more socks from the Socks That Rocks Club, the Blue Moon Fiber Arts Sock Club. I don't know when I think it was in 2010 that I was a member of that club and received the shipments. And I have to say, I loved all of them, every single colorway, even the ones that were pink and the one that was totally pale. And I don't do pastels usually, but I loved all of them. For most of the socks, I made one sock with each of the patterns, because that year there were two patterns and one skein of sock yarn in each shipment. And I wanted to try them all. So for most of them, I did like one sock of one with one pattern and the other with the other. And it really makes me smile every time I look down at my feet. And only once as a student of mine, I realized that I was wearing two different socks. That was a kindergartner. They're always more perceptive. Other than that, it's pretty fine. They look like they belong together. So the ones that I made were the checkerboard sock and the canopy sock. And then I made a pair of spider socks. I love them. The reason I made a pair instead of single socks was that the other pattern in that for that yarn was one where you needed more than half a skein. And so I thought I'd do that with a different yarn. One of the bigger projects last year was designing the Celtic summer socks. I designed that sock for a class I taught about, sock knitting. And that was like the advanced sock knitting class, socks with lace, with cables, and with color work. So since there were only six evenings in that class, I thought, lace, cables, and color work, that's a bit much. So I said, I'll just design two sock patterns, and the students can knit those, and then they know everything there is to know about making, difficult socks. And the Celtic summer socks are with lace and cables. And I used something like a Cadbury's construction that she used in the new Pathways sock book. And I like them pretty much. You can, if you like them too, you can buy the pattern on Ravelry. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. The other pattern I designed for that class is called Meadow Abstract, and it's colorwork socks. They look like bright orange flowers on grass. The pattern isn't ready yet, which is a bit embarrassing because, in a way, it has been finished for not quite a year. But I decided that I wanted to do two more sizes, and designing that and writing the pattern and translating the pattern into English, I don't know why it took me so long. And I'm still not done, but I really, really, really want to get this out. So once that's done, you will be able to buy that pattern as well. And there's a picture of the first finished sock on my Ravelry Projects page. Then I knit another shawl, a small one. And this all started with Sandy Weishart had a contest on her blog, and the prize was a skein of sock yarn from Indigo Dragonfly in the TARDIS colorway. So now I'm a big Doctor Who fan, like I don't know half the world or so, and I don't usually like blue at all, and but that skein spoke to me. I don't know why, and at that time I had the feeling that I needed something to boost my creativity, and that I needed something to strengthen my throat chakra, and the color for the throat chakra is blue. So I ordered a skein because I didn't win it in the contest. I ordered a skein of that and thought, oh, I'll just make myself a nice, cozy shawl with that. And at first I wanted to do the Aiki shawlette by Jenna Laidman. And then I found out that my yarn would not have been enough for that. So I had to try something else. And then I knit Pagona by Stephen West. And I liked knitting it, but then it sat there and I tried wrapping it around my neck. And I really didn't like the look of that at all. So I didn't quite know what to do, and I didn't block it, and I wasn't content. And so I just frogged it totally and knit another shawlette. It's the Out of My Head pattern. I like it very much. I even blocked it, but it's sitting on the pile of things to be photographed, and I haven't worn it at all. But I will one day when wool doesn't make me itchy any longer. I also started a sock leftover blanket in crochet, which seemed to be a very good idea at the that moment. I have tons of leftover sock yarn that aren't enough for socks and that are in all kinds of colors, mostly orange and red, but, well, all sorts. And I never knew what to make with them. Some of them were almost enough for socks, but not quite. And I didn't want to give them away. And yeah, and then somebody on Ravelry, I don't know, we had a discussion on crochet and said, oh, that blanket's so cool. And it is. It looks gorgeous. It's made of Noro in the original. And I thought, I could make that from my sock leftovers. And I started it and I liked it. But then I found out that I don't really... It's not that I don't like crochet, but if I do it for too long, it hurts my wrists. So I must be doing something wrong. And I can't crochet while watching TV because I have to look at my crochet in order to do that. Otherwise, I miss the whatever, where you push your hook through. And so I still want to make that, but I didn't get very far. I made like, I don't know, 10 squares. The big ones are all completed. But I struggle a bit with the short ones because there are so many ends to weave in. And I don't know, I think it's the same with knitting. I don't like to work with too many colors because I have to weave all these ends in. And then starting a short square that has only two rows of stitches, it feels like it isn't almost worth to start it. But still, I have a big basket. All the sock yarn leftovers are in the basket and the pattern and the hooks. And yeah, one day I'll have a nice little blanket from my leftover yarn. It has been sitting there for quite a while, but I'm still optimistic. The other thing, then I started what I call the Mossy Turtle. It's the Sheldon pattern. It was published in Knitty some years before. It's a very, very cute turtle, and you can dress and undress the turtle. It has a removable shell. And I started knitting that for my son because, at first I wanted to make it for myself because I looked at the pattern and thought, oh, I want to have one like that. And then my son saw it and said, I want one like that. And I thought, okay, then I'll make two. And I started knitting it, and everything went fine. And then there came the point where I would have had to sew everything together and stuff it. And then I put it in a bag. And, I thought I would have it ready for Christmas 2010, but I hadn't. And then I thought I would have it ready for Easter, but I hadn't. And then I thought, well, maybe Christmas 2011. I can tell you it's still not finished, but I'm getting there because I pulled it out 2 days ago or three, I don't know. And I have finished the upper shell. And so the only thing left now is I have to make an I-cord around the shell to connect the upper and the bottom shell. Sorry. I don't know why I'm hoarse all of a sudden. So, yeah, I have to connect that. I have to stuff the legs and sew them on, and then I'm done. But I find it hard to get there because I really need a bit of space in my head to do that because I need to concentrate. The light has to be right, and it's quite fiddly, and apparently I haven't been in the mood for fiddly knitting for more than a year, but it's driving me crazy, that thing. So, you know, I even had a podcast listener write me a PM on a Reverie saying, if you want to send me that turtle, I'll sew it together for you. And I was totally embarrassed by that. And then I thought, no, I can finish my own project, really. It might take me a bit of time, but no, I'll get there eventually, really. So that turtle is not yet finished, but almost. I also made a pair of socks for myself. I call them feminine candy because the yarn's really looking like candy or colors. It's pink and dark pink and orange, and then there's a very light lime green in there or something. And that was just fun and quick to knit. And I made, let me think, that was another catboardy pattern. I totally forgot the name, but that's one of the, how's it called? It's the second one in the Pathways series, I think. Not the new Pathways, the one after that. I also started double-faced StarTech potholders sometime back in June. And I found that fiddly and tedious, and, well, my tension wasn't right, and I didn't like the selvages. So I put it away. I had a fit of, I have to finish things, last week. And so I pulled the pot holders out again and looked at them and frocked them and started again and finished the first one and found that I didn't have enough yarn for both. And then I frocked it again, and I started again using still smaller needles. And I'm pretty happy, even if I made a mistake. When I started the pattern, it's not centered. But I decided, oh, it's only a potholder, so I don't care. And so I finished the first pot holder and found that, I'm really short with the yarn, but there might be enough. And then I made the second one, and then I found, I didn't have enough of the orange yarn. It's an orange and red. And, when I looked at the ball bands closely, I found that the ball band of the orange skein must have been removed at one point and was taped together and looked a bit crumpled. And I have the suspicion that somebody went to the yarn shop and took 5 grams off that skein, ball of yarn. And then somebody put the label back on to make it look like it was a full skein of yarn. So, I had to make the second pot holder 4 rows shorter than the second one. So they are not perfect pot holders, but my husband and I love them, and they will be pretty handy even if one's a bit shorter than the other one. No problem. I made Rivendell socks for myself. I have been wanting to make those for ages. And sometime in June again, I found that I was totally out of sock yarn, which was a bit startling. And so I had to order more and bought like 5 or 6 skeins, I think, of spinning Martha sock yarn. She's a hand dyer here in Germany. And I love her colors. And so the Rivendell sock is made from something green. I don't remember the color's name, but it's beautiful. And then I started Glomerata in a such a gorgeous, gorgeous violet. I want to buy like 10 skeins of that and make myself a cardigan. The Glomerata socks didn't go all that smoothly because I started knitting them right when they came out in Knitty. And it turned out that there were, I don't know, a few mistakes in the pattern. And so when I tried to do the heel, it didn't really work. And then I sent Lisa Grossman an email, and she was very nice, and it was all resolved very quickly. But I don't know, it put me to a stop. I didn't want to fiddle with that, and so I put that away and started something else. But a few weeks later, I pulled it out again, and by then the instructions were correct, and so I just sailed through the whole thing and finished both socks in record time, and I love them. They're really, really beautiful. Then I did another Cat Bordy sock because Cat Bordy has another sock book out. This one's available only as an ebook from her, and you get it in installments. So you buy the whole book, and right now I think there are still 2 patterns missing in the book. The socks are really nice. The construction method is really interesting. I'm not quite sure if I like them or not. I have to change them a bit around because my instep's very high, and the sock pattern has a short row heel, but she tells you how to change the pattern for a high instep in the book, so you're not left alone with that. It's pretty easy to knit, so you don't have to do a lot of calculations or anything. You can just start and knit your sock straight away and then try it on and see, okay, I'll do a bit more of this. So I made a test sock, that I called Bloß keine Tomaten, which means, anything but tomatoes. I don't like tomatoes, and, this sock heel that she's, talking about in that book is called the sweet tomato heel because it's as smooth as a tomato. And since I don't like tomatoes, that's what I call the socks. And I made another pattern out of that sock. It's called something foliage. I don't know. And I called that sock feather foliage and pines. Then there was the yearly Woolly Warmhead Mystery Knit Along. And since I had never made one of her hats, but I heard so much good things about them, I decided to participate. Since I was also a bit low on cash, I decided to use something from my stash. And I couldn't find a suitable yarn in there. So I took some blue-faced Leicester roving that I had around top, sorry, and I spun the yarn for those hats. There were 2 hats in the mystery knit along. I made them both, and I spun the yarn on my spindle, and I'll talk about that a bit more in the spinning section. They turned out really well. Only problem is, it seems that my husband is allergic to that fiber. I don't know why, because he isn't allergic to wool usually, and I've worked with blue-faced Leicester before, but with this fiber, every time I spun it, he had to sneeze and sneeze and sneeze. And then when I was knitting it even, so I could only work on it when he wasn't around. And there was a point when I was spinning on that only in my studio. And afterwards, I would brush all my clothes off and vacuum the floor. So what else? I knit another pair of socks for my husband. I call those Fast Stinos. Stinos is a German abbreviation for socks so normal that they're, you know, I don't know how to say that in English. It's stinknormal. It's like really, really ordinary socks. But these aren't all that ordinary. I did them with a 2x2 rib all through the sock, not on the sole. I put a bit of a twisted stitches in the ribbing. So that's why they're not quite ordinary. Then I started participating in yet another knit along. That's the Flight Path knit along. It's still going because it should have been over by now. But the designer, Mary Scott Huffington, made a mistake in calculating the yarn that was needed for the kit. And it was all hand dyed by Abstract Fibers. And turned out that she made a mistake by half. So right now the second clue is out, but people have already run out of yarn. I'll see how that goes because I'm spinning my own yarn for that as well. I ordered 5 colors of merino. I ordered 100 grams each. That's 4 ounces, just about a bit less. And I made all the yarn that was specified for the knit along, but that's probably only half of what's needed. So I might have to spin some more for that. So far it looks fine. Pretty interesting. I don't quite know what it will be. I'm guessing a hat. But on the other hand, there's so much yarn left. We'll see. And then I actually made a washcloth. I would never have thought that I'd do something like that. And not only did I make a washcloth, I made a cotton washcloth from hand-spun cotton. So I started spinning cotton, and I'll tell you, well, you know what? I'll just tell you about that later. But I knitted that small washcloth, and I like it so much that after I finished it, I started spinning cotton for the next one. So, and then I made Windchief hat and cowl for my husband. My husband loves cowls and scarves. He wears them all the time, and hats. And so I don't know. I wanted to make that for him, and I didn't. No, I don't think I made it specifically for his birthday, but it was sometime around January when I decided to make a hat and cowl for him. I haven't taken pictures of that because he's wearing it constantly, and I need to wash it first before I can take photos. And yeah, I have this huge pile of finished knitted objects that I want to photograph, and that's one of the things I didn't get around to. So, spinning. There has been quite a bit of spinning. You know what? In my whole list, I totally forgot I have a hand-spun cardigan. It's not on the list. I see that because on my spinning list, first thing is hand-dyed merino for a sweater. And that sweater's already finished. I knit it. The only thing I still need to do is put in a zipper and take a picture. But Other than that, it's totally finished. The whole thing started last summer, I think. A spinning friend of mine was trading with other people because she wanted knitted socks, and she's a fabulous knitter, but she doesn't knit socks at all. So she dyed 400 grams of merino top for me, and in exchange for that, I knitted two pairs of socks for her. The merino was, it turned out a bit paler than I wanted, but I love the color nonetheless. But it's quite pink, a bit orangey pink, but quite. So at first I wasn't really sure about it. And then I started spinning it, and still it was a bit hard to spin because it was a little compacted. Not badly, just a little. So I spun the yarn, and then I found that I might have not quite enough for a sweater, but, well, ever optimistic, I hoped it would be enough. The sweater happened somewhat because I was teaching another knitting class about how to knit a perfectly fitting sweater. So that was my sample sweater. I made that during the class. The knitting classes I teach usually last 6 weeks. We meet once a week for 90 minutes. And so the students and I have time between classes to knit on things and then come back and show me, and I can help them with problems. So our goal in this class was to knit a sweater top down for, well, someone. Most people knit a sweater for themselves, but one woman knit, she made two sweaters for her two daughters, like four-year-old daughters, so not all that big. Those sweaters, they were very cute. So that cardigan was my sample sweater. That was the very first time ever that I tried short row shaping for the in the front where the boobs are. And I used Isolde Tieck's formula of calculating how many short rows over how many stitches, and that was so great. The whole thing fits like a dream. I was really cursing a bit because I had to do all these calculations and all these swatches and do it all by the book. But really, it was totally worth it. The only thing I would have loved to add is in the back, if there were a few short rows at the bottom of the back, so that when I'm sitting, the sweater goes down a little further. That would have been lovely. But that was the point where I thought, oh, maybe I just have enough for the whole sweater. Since I knew I would be short on yarn, I made it in a way that I planned to do the button bands, the ribbing at the bottom, and the neckband all in one go. So I went all around the sweater. So I knew that if I ran out of yarn, I could make that whole band in garter stitch in a different color, and it wouldn't feel like I just added extra yarn somewhere because I ran out. It turned out I ran out of yarn. I ordered a bit more merino top and slightly different colors because I couldn't get more of that hand-dyed. There was just no way. So I ordered something that's just, it's, the colors are similar but way darker. And I made all the bands and the, like at the sleeves and the whole cardigan, they are made from darker merino. And so it looks like I had always planned it this way. So clever me. I'm pretty happy with that sweater. I haven't worn it a lot because I want it to be in pristine condition for my next sweater class. So I can show people, look, I finished this. This is how it's looking. And now I'll teach you how to put in a zipper. Because that's a lot of people think, oh God, sewing a zipper in a sweater is really hard. And so I want to show them how to do that. So, what else? I spun some merino and silk top orange for socks. I haven't done a lot on this project. It's I'm looking at the spindle right now. It sits next to my computer, and I keep carrying it around with me, thinking, "Oh yeah, I'll work on that." But then there are all these other interesting spinning projects. So the spindle sits in the back. I'm sure eventually that will become socks, but I'm just not working a lot on them. Then I ordered a tiny Turkish spindle from Threads Through Time, and that came a bit off a top with that. I spun that, I don't know, it was really small amount of top. I have it in a ball somewhere, I think. And then since my tiny Turkish took so long to arrive, it was really amazing. It took about 2 months or so, and we thought it might have got lost in the mail. I ordered another Turkish spindle from IST Crafts, and at first I didn't like it at all. And so it was really pretty. I just thought, oh no, I won't use that. It's too fragile. And I was just about to sell it a few weeks ago. Sorry. I was just about to sell it. And then I thought, I don't know, I just started spinning some silk on it. That was so amazing. I had ordered that silk, I don't know, maybe 1.5 years ago, something like that. And I had started to spin it on my Bosworth Featherweight. And in the beginning, I was totally in love with the silk and the spinning because I can spin it so fine and it's so pretty. It's a nice red color. But then I always got this tangled mess. And I don't know, I had problems spinning that silk and I got really frustrated. And so I put it away. And then some time ago, there was an issue of this, how's it called, Spinnet magazine. It's an electronic magazine from Interweave that has videos and slideshows and is, I don't know, I don't like the navigation on that, but the magazine itself is really, really great because you have all these videos and articles and slideshows, and so you can see things better than in a printed magazine for quite a few things. So and that was the last issue had this main focus on silk, and there was a video and an article by Sarah Lamb showing how to spin silk, and that made me think, oh, I have the silk somewhere, I want to spin this. So I pulled that out, and then I pulled that Turkish spindle from IST Crafts out, and they are a perfect match. And so for like 2 weeks or so, all I did was spin silk on that spindle. And since I've seen the video and have the tips from Sarah, it has been going so much better. Next. Oh yeah, there was 4 ounces of Blueface Leicester that I bought at the very first German Reveler meeting in 2009. And that had been sitting in my stash looking at me. And I had wanted to make that into a lace shawl with this gradient. It had, first part was green, yeah. Second part was blue. Third part was red. Fourth part was yellow. And I wanted to spin it all in a long, 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 long thread and make and then chain ply it. So I started spinning that on that tiny Turkish spindle that I got from Threads Through Time. And it was really frustrating. I wanted that to be very, very, very fine for the lace and the chain ply. And I couldn't get the thread to behave. And then I thought, oh, I don't like the fiber. This isn't going well. And then, I don't know, after a few weeks of trying it, I got so frustrated. And then I thought, well, what's the problem here? And I looked at it and I found that the fiber was compacted a bit, which happens when you hand dye things. And so because it was compacted, I couldn't draft it out as fine as I wanted. So in order to draft it out that fine, I had to struggle with the fiber, and that made the whole spinning a struggle. So I thought, well, what if I just spin it just a little thicker? And when I did that, everything fell into place. I had started to spin that fiber first on my new, I have a new lace flyer for my little gem wheel. And I had started to spin it on there, but I wasn't happy with that. So I tried it to do it with a spindle, and then turned out I had to spin it thicker and I couldn't make it into what I wanted it to become. But that doesn't matter. At times it seemed as if I would spin this fiber forever and ever and ever and never finish it. But then, I don't know, something happened and all of a sudden it wasn't all that tedious anymore, and it's finished, and I chain plied it. First time chain ply, and I love it. It looks great. And now I sit there and don't know what to make from it, because it's the yardage isn't enough for a shawl. And as I said, at the moment, I'm not wearing shawls, so I don't quite know. It sits there looking pretty in the skein. I'll find something to make from it eventually. Then I got myself some Polwarth from the Painted Tiger, and that's a gradient as well. And that was the thing that I spun on my new lace flyer instead of the Blue-Faced Leicester. I love the colors. They're great. Thing is, I wanted that to be very, very, very fine lace weight yarn, so it took forever. I split the top down in two parts, and I'm doing these fractal stripes thing. There was an article in Spinoff about that, where you take one half of the fiber, you split it lengthwise, you take one half of the fiber and you spin it. I remember I started spinning it, I don't know, a couple of weeks before a spinning meeting that went for a whole weekend. And then that weekend I spun nothing else but that fiber. And I was at a point where I thought, well, I better take another project, because that first half will be done. It wasn't. It still took me like 3 or 4 more days to fill the first bobbin. And I got really frustrated with that, because it took so long. But that means that I really spun it fine enough. I'd love to make a featherweight cardigan out of this yarn if I have enough of it. So that first half of the top is spun as it's dyed. So it's going from brown through red to yellow, I think. So I have these long, 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 long color, lengths of color. And the second half I took and split into, I think, 6 parts lengthwise. So that one will have much shorter color repeats. So that first thread, the single, that's like, I don't know, 100 Meters of Brown, will come together with another single that has more variation in the colors. I'm pretty excited to see how that will come out, but I have to admit that after the first bobbin, I put it away and started something else because I couldn't stand it anymore. So it's still sitting there. First half is done. Then there was Tour de Fleece, and I'll talk about that a bit later, but I got this totally crazy idea of using that Tour de Fleece to spin 2 pounds of fiber into 3-ply for a sweater, and for a specific sweater, the Wheatgrass Truffle Cardigan by Sandy Weishart. I love the pattern. It's really great. Yeah. So I'll talk about that later because I made a show about that Tour de Fleece, and so you'll hear all about it then. So spinning. There was even more Blue-Faced Lester. This seems like the year of Blue-Faced Lester to me. I spun some oatmeal Blue-Faced Lester for this Woolly Warm Hat mystery on my Bosworth Featherweight. I wanted that to become 3-ply sock yarn. I have to admit, most of what I'm spinning is supposed to be either 3-ply sock yarn or 2-ply lace weight. Usually it turns out a bit thicker than that, as did this BFL. I ended up with, what was it, sports weight yarn. But after spending the whole month of June spindle spinning and trying to spin 2 pounds of yarn, I found that my spindle spinning has gotten much faster than before, which is a good thing. So I spun that Blue-Faced Lester in record time. I split it into 3 parts, and I think it took me about 4 days to spun the whole thing. That's like a little less than 4 ounces, 100 grams or so. So that was amazingly fast for me on a spindle. On a wheel as well, but especially on a spindle. So I still needed yarn, sock weight yarn for the other hat. And I used, again, Blue-Faced Lester. I had some that was a naturally colored stripey. It was cream and oatmeal and brown. I would love to lay my hands on some of that brown Blue-Faced Lester all by itself. That would be so gorgeous, but you can't get it. You only get this top that has the 3 colors in it. It's still gorgeous, but I love chocolate brown, and that Blue-Faced Lester is really, really chocolatey. It's nice. So I spun that again on the Bosworth Featherweight, and it took almost no time. It was really great. I was spinning day and night too, but still I'm getting faster with the spindle. Then I started spinning cotton because I got this, not the DVD, I downloaded the movie from Interweave again about spinning cotton from Stephanie Gaustadt, however you pronounce that, I have no idea. And that made me really think about the whole thing, and then, well, I want to try that. And so I got myself a Tarkley, a pair Tarkley, not the genuine item, but that was the only thing I could get here, and it's okay, I think. And I got a bag of cotton, and yeah, it took me some time to finish that, but I don't know. There was a point when it just clicked, and then all I wanted to do all day long was spin cotton. And I found that I can spin on a supported spindle, even in bed, which is nice because, you don't need to be able to drop the spindle anyway, anywhere. You can have it on in your lap and spin away. It was so nice. The only thing I have to caution you against when you're sitting in bed and you have your laptop on your knees because you're watching a DVD and you have the tuckley and are spinning cotton, make sure that your thread doesn't break, because otherwise your spindle will fall right onto the laptop. Fortunately, nothing broke but the thread. But yeah, I found that maybe in the future I'd need a lighter supported spindle so that my computer doesn't break while I'm... I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't sit in bed to watch DVDs and spin cotton, but it was fun. Yeah, what else? Oh, the merino for the flight path knit along. Yeah, so I got this big bag. You can't order just like 15 grams of fiber. That's half an ounce or an ounce, not in Germany. The least you can order is 100 grams. And there are even places where you have to order a kilo. That's like a pound. I don't usually do that. But for the flight path knit along, I wanted to make the yarn myself. And so I got these different colors of merino. And merino was the only thing that I could get that had enough colors for me to choose from, because I needed teal, I think, or turquoise, and an orange, and blue, and green. What else? Purple. Yeah. So I ordered all that. I sampled for the spinning. I started knitting. The yarn was way too thick. I changed to a lighter spindle. I tried again. And yeah, right now I'm quite happy with it. And yeah, I'm just waiting for the knit along to start again. And that was a really interesting thing this year, that I was starting to get focused so much on the spindle spinning, especially with me getting the lace flyer that I had wanted for years now. I thought I'd sit down and spin on my wheel all the time, but I didn't. I have spindles all around the house, and I'm spinning all the time. The nice thing about the spindles for me and for many people I know is that I can take them with me. I don't have to think. I started even taking a spindle with me when I'm going to PTA meetings. I just sit there and spin away. I don't have to think about a pattern. There's no real mistake to make. I can just sit there. Of course, people are always staring. It's really funny. I sat on the train and spun, and I felt like half of all the people in the train were trying to look without me noticing. Very funny. So, and I get a lot of done work because I have a spindle that lives on the fridge, and when my husband makes lunch, and that's at that point where you just have to stand there, watch the pots. There's nothing else for me to do, really. Well, there would be, but I'm just sitting in the kitchen spinning away for 5 minutes or 10 here and there, and it really adds up. And I found that I even can spin while reading. That's a great thing. And yeah, so I've been doing a lot with the spindles. And the funny thing is that I even got a second spinning wheel this year. That's, I don't know. It all started with everybody telling all about their Canadian production wheels on Reverie. Everyone was going like, oh, well, that's so great, and you need... And I was, for years, I was thinking like, you're crazy, I don't want a wheel like that. They're ugly, I don't like them, I don't want a single treadle, I have a wheel, forget it. And then all of a sudden, I thought, well, maybe that would be a nice idea to have a wheel that's made specially for spinning fine yarn. Maybe a flex wheel. And with double drive, and that would be great. And then I thought, well, I don't have to go to Canada to get a spinning wheel. There are German spinning wheels. And so there must be a way of getting an old production wheel here in Germany. And then I kept thinking. And then I thought, well, I have this friend. I know her since forever, since she was a baby. And I know that she has an antique spinning wheel and that she isn't using it. So I thought, maybe I should take a look at her wheel and then maybe I could use that. That would be nice. So I went to see her. You know, she has been living in that place for more than 2 years and I never went to see her until I thought, well, what about her wheel? So I went there, I looked at the wheel, and I bought it from her. So now I have a very nice flex wheel sitting here. I don't know anything about the maker or anything. It looks a lot like the Swedish wheels I've seen. There's a tiny part missing, but I don't. I think it's fully functional. I think I got it at the beginning of November, and I still have to put a drive band on it and oil it. And I was so enthralled by the spindles that I didn't even want to try the wheel out, which is really a shame. I think it's a great wheel, and when I couldn't spin on it. But so far, from what I can tell, it goes very smoothly. It goes. The drive wheel goes on forever and ever and ever. So I'm really looking forward to spin on this, but I have so many spindle and other projects right now that I don't really want to start another one. But I have a second spinning wheel now. I thought I'd never do that, and I thought I'd never get myself a Saxon wheel, but there it is. Sitting here. I can look at it. And the new drive band's already here. I only have to tie it on. Yeah. So I think that's all that I've been spinning. So we can go on to the topics section. So this is the section where I'm telling you all about all the topics I've been talking about on the podcast. So I have a little problem here because I stopped making detailed show notes. Very sorry. I tried to streamline the podcast producing process, which means that I stopped writing essays. I just chose a topic and then I start talking. So that means I don't really have any notes on the topics because I just talked about them. Then I thought, well, I can be a really, if I had done my research right, I would have listened to all the back podcast. So that would have been like more than 9 hours of podcast. I think about 12 or so. Yeah. Nope. So I'll just try to remember what I said. And anyways, you know, I talked on those topics for like 20 to 30 minutes or more. You don't want this here. That would be like 9 topics, each one a half an hour. Yeah. No way. So we see. First topic I did was on colors. That idea came from Tini from the... Oh, you have to check that out. She has an English podcast as well. She's German. Her podcast is called Twin Needle. And she said, well, what about color? Because as you probably know, I'm a big fan of color, of bright color, of orange and reds and such. And, well, a lot of people aren't. And then there's this question of what's a suitable color for a man to wear. Now, I'm quite fortunate with my husband. because he practically wears everything. I wouldn't knit him a bright yellow sweater necessarily. Yeah, but I think if I did, he would wear it. And so I was thinking about that because, you know, some people think that colors have meaning. Well, colors have meaning. We have them like white for innocence and black for funerals and red for love and these things. But and I know people who think that those meanings are universal, but they aren't. If you look, for example, white in Asia, white's the color for mourning and funerals, not black. And all kinds of things. And then I read a book by a German hand. She's a dyer, and she dyes with plant colors. And she talked about colors and about what people need and like which feelings she associates with certain colors. And that was totally interesting because she said that for her, yellow is like the desert and dry and hot. And I was like, what? So I think that the meaning that color has for people is highly personal. And for example, I know a lot of people who love blue, like my mother. And I had a friend who's an art teacher, and she only ever wore blue and white. And their whole house only had white and blue in them. And so when she sees blue, she's like, oh, nice blue. And then I remember that when I made the scarf for my husband, out of Wollmeise, how's it called? Gewitterhimmel or something? So that's a thunderstorm colorway. And it has teal and dark gray, almost black, and a bright blue. Yeah, I think that's it. And so I was knitting along, and it was going very slowly because it was this weird slip stitch sort of pattern. And I kept making mistakes, and they were really hard to correct. So I knitted along with a, oh, gray, 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 fine. And then teal, oh, teal, 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 nice, nice, nice. And then I was like, blue, 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 oh, teal, teal. And I found that my reaction to these colors is so extreme. And if you show me something and that's orange, I'll always say, oh, that's pretty, regardless of how it looks, just because it's orange. And that appeals to me so much. And like, I can't stand pastels. Well, I like them, but not, I don't wear them. They make me look like I'm sick and about to die. So I don't do that. But you know, people are different. I know people who only wear neutrals because they feel weird when they wear anything else. And me, I had a time when I thought that like neon yellow was a neutral color because it went with everything I had. Yeah, it was for me, but you know, I know other people didn't see it like that. So, and I think it's really sad that people, it's sad if people wear only neutrals because they are too shy to try to wear something bright. Because I find that bright colors can make me very, very happy just by looking at them. And you get used to standing out. Doesn't bother me much. It bothers my husband a lot. So when we're out and I'm wearing my red coat, and everybody else here in Munich in the winter is wearing black, gray, and gray. And then there's maybe a bit of navy blue. And then there are like really wild people who wear olive. And so I'm sitting there, red coat, and it's a designer coat as well. It's a Noah Noah coat, so it's a bit extravagant anyways. And that with my red hat and my colorwork mittens and a bright striped scarf. I didn't realize it, but my husband said, oh, could you please not wear that coat because then people are looking at you. Yeah. I told him that, no, I wear the coat, and he just can't pretend he's not with me. But he has gotten more comfortable with this, but I find that there are quite a few people who are really afraid of wearing color don't. And then there's the question of what color suits me and what do I look good in and what, you know, you just have to try. Like yellow for me is a really hard color. Mostly yellow makes me look really sick and pale and gives my skin, it brings out the yellow undertone in my skin. Really, really nice. But I'm sure somewhere in the world there's a yellow that I can wear next to my face and it looks good on me. You just have to find the right shade. There's this theory in fashion and such that people are, they group people according to seasons. Like I'm a fall type. Everything that looks good on me has a warm, browny undertone. So it's not all orange that looks good on me. It's only the warm oranges and the warm olive green. If there's too much gray in there, green looks horrible on me. So you have to try things out if they fit you or not. For example, jewel tones, I can't really do. I do anyway, and then I look bad, but because I don't care. But yeah, so don't be afraid of color. Just try a lot of things and find what you're comfortable with, and then maybe do a bright accessory or so. If you wear neutrals because you love them, nice, okay, do that. If you wear neutrals because you're afraid to wear color, don't. Nobody dies if you combine two colors that don't match. Really. No. No one. Even if you combine two colors that don't match and then put a third on that doesn't match either, you might look like a clown, but you won't die. I promise. I can tell you from experience. I think that was most of what I talked about in my colors episode. I'm not quite sure. Next episode was about designing knitwear because I had been trying to finish those two sock patterns. And at that point when I recorded the episode, I had a sort of epiphany about the designing process with me. I know there are a lot of people who just start out knitting any which way and then later they write it down. And well, starting out any which way works for me if I'm knitting something, but I find that it takes a lot of time when I do that because that was the point. I started knitting something. I looked at it. I didn't like it. I ripped it out, and writing the pattern down afterwards was really, I didn't like it at all. And then I had this epiphany, as I said, then I found, oh, when I just write it all down as a pattern first, and then when I knit, I only follow the pattern that I made, even if it doesn't turn out the way I like it and I rip it all back, it goes way, way faster because the points where I stall in my knitting and that's where my knitting becomes UFOs, UFOs, sorry. In German, it's one word. It's UFO. And so I tend to say that in English. Sorry, UFO. That's when, those are the points when I find, okay, now what do I need to do next? And I don't have it written down, but I have to think about it. So for me, it goes much faster if I just write it all down, say, okay, do this, do this, do this, do this. Then I knit it. And even when I find, oh, this doesn't work, I rip it back and I have to change the pattern, it works better for me. And the other thing was that I got myself software for designing to make the chart. I can't even remember what it's called, and it's not a good software, but it's the one that's cheapest. Oh, what it's called? I'll look it up. Maybe I'll find it. Yeah, I have it. It's called Intwine Studio. So it's really affordable. It does most of what I need. There are a few things that I don't really like about it. And I found that for me, it works much better to export the files and then compilate the whole pattern in, what am I using? Is it called that program you're doing slides with from Microsoft with PowerPoint? Yeah. So I'm using that. Not the bestest process ever, but yeah. After almost finishing my two patterns, I've been thinking about the designing, but that's not in that episode I'm talking about. And I think I just stop the whole designing career because it's just, in a way, it's too much work for me. I don't really enjoy it. But I'll see. We'll see. Maybe I'll do some more patterns. Maybe I don't. First, I'll finish that colorwork sock. And in that episode, I also talked about you have this idea. I'm one of those people who have a lot of ideas all the time. Well, mostly. And so I start out and think, oh, I want to do this. I want to make that. And then I make a little sketch that looks nothing like what I have in my head because I can't really draw, which is, well, unsurprisingly, I never practiced. So, but I have an idea in my head. So I say, okay, I want to make a stole for a friend and that I want to have these and these and these elements in, and I want it to be purple, and blah, blah. So I make, and then I stop. So I have a sketch, and that's it. And then going from that sketch to an actual pattern that you can knit, and then going from that to an actual pattern that other people can knit, without you standing by their side and saying, oh, no, that's not what I meant. You have to do it like this. That's a lot of work. And really, I think it gets a little less work when you do it a lot. But really, and all the math makes my head hurt. But, well, no problem. So I talked about that, going from that idea to, you know, you have to be really exact. You can't just do this sketch and say, okay, this is what I want the sweater to look like, and use this yarn, and I want it to be loose and drapey. But you have to put on in all the work of calculations, and yeah, I'd love this scarf to have a border that's not that narrow, but if I do that, people will need more than one skein, so that's not good, and things like that. So, talked about the designing process a bit, and then the episode after that was called The Perfect Bag. I have a bit of a bag fetish. So I don't have a whole closet in my house full of bags. It's not that big a fetish, but I'm very partial to my bags and purses. And so, what was it? I think it was just before I went to a big spinning meeting, and that made me realize that I wasn't really happy with the purse I had. So and I was thinking about what I like in a bag and what I want and if I should design my own or not. I still have a little notebook with a sketch of how my perfect purse would look. It's really pretty. It has rounded corners and you can wear it as a purse and as a backpack. And it has like tons of interior pockets where everything fits in. And it's not too big and not too small and just perfect. And yeah, I was looking at several bags. I had at the point one purse that was too small because you couldn't fit a regular magazine or a sheet of paper in there. While that purse was big enough for everything I need, plus a paperback book and a sock project, it really got a bit cramped and also one of the handles fell off. If you load your purse with a big wallet and everything you could possibly need, plus a Harry Potter 7 and a sock project, might happen. Because that purse was too small, I got myself a Namaste Laguna bag. And I do love a few aspects about it. It's really nice big. I love the color. I'm not so happy about the material because of the way I wore it. The fake leather at the handles wore through after 2 months. That was because I wore the handles folded back. So they rested against my hip when I wore it on the strap. And so that those handles rubbed at my coat constantly. I'm walking a lot. I almost never use the car. I didn't realize this, but all my coats as well have like, you can see where my bag rests against the coat and they rub against each other when I walk. Yep. So that bag handled the abrasion not quite as well as I had hoped, but that was partly my fault for wearing it the wrong way. What I love and hate at the same time about that bag is it has really strong magnetic snaps. So the strong magnetic snaps is a plus when you're a knitter, your yarn doesn't catch in there. The drawback is that those snaps ruined two of my credit cards. Yep. It wasn't my credit, it was my debit card, but it doesn't really make a difference. When it was ruined for the second time, I realized that it was the magnetic snaps and that I had to keep my wallet away from them. So that's a drawback in my book. And the other thing is that because of the way I used the interior big zippered pocket, I had a plastic thing for my paper stuff. And that plastic thing had sharp edges. And that turned out to destroy the interior lining. So right now, my Laguna bag has one huge interior compartment. And the Laguna bag has very soft sides, so everything sags and falls. It's never tidy. You can never find anything. You have to like crawl into the bag to find anything. So I was thinking about the perfect bag and about knitting bags, and I use the Go Knit Purchase a lot. And I have like little sub bags in my big purse because, I'm a dork. I have like a little pouch that holds lipstick and my comb and a mirror and a pocket knife and things like that. The knitting is in a separate bag and the spindle is in a separate bag and yeah. So I thought about what I wanted from a bag. And so in the end, I got myself a new bag from Crumpler. It's called The Dentist's Wife. I have no idea why. And it has tons of interior pockets. So everything I need has its own pocket. Well, apart from the knitting and the... I still use the pouch for all the small things. So that when I change purses, it's really easy to transfer things. And I'm totally happy with that bag. It's just the right size. My laptop fits in it securely. Only I've never put my laptop in there. I just use it as a purse. But if I wanted, I could take my laptop with me. And there's still enough room for a small knitting project and the Kindle and the iPod and my cell phone and wallet and keys. And everything's separate pockets, so I don't have to search for hours before I find anything. I love it. So then I had the perfect bag, but I don't think I took it with me. But next topic on the podcast was knitting on the road. I went to that big spinning meeting that was three days long. I'm not quite sure. It was a weekend, Saturday and Sunday in June. And I went there and I tried to travel with only a purse and the spinning wheel. And I succeeded. But yeah, I had a big purse. That was the Laguna bag and it was all the way full. I don't knit on the road as much as I used to. I'm forever taking trains and knitting on the train is great. But I don't know, I got a bit fed up with sitting there in my coat with my mittens and my hat and my purse and knitting on top of that. You have to manage all these things and there are people sitting next to you and I've started to read more fiction again. So usually these days I'm reading on the train. But every time I take a longer trip, of course, I take some knitting and spinning. And sometimes even when I just go and meet somebody for breakfast, because you never know. And so taking my knitting and spinning is like taking a security blanket. So usually when I leave the house, apart from the pocket knife and the chapstick and the comb and the mirror, I also have a spinning project, at least one book and a small knitting project. Sometimes I start knitting projects just because I know I'm going to sit on a train or in a meeting. So that's why I'm knitting plain vanilla socks. That's, yeah. And for that, I like the Go Knit pouches because they are small. You can handle them pretty well. You can hang them from your chair or just leave it. Yeah, I love it. I don't know what else I talked about, but since I can't think about it, say, okay, that's it. Then I made two episodes about the Tour de Fleece. First of all, I think first episode was just before the tour was about to start, and I told everybody about my big plans of spinning 2 pounds of fiber for that sweater on a spindle. So I got myself, I found it's even more than 2 pounds. It's 1 kilo. A kilo is 2.2 pounds. Is it? Yeah, it is. A kilo is 2.2 pounds. So I got myself a kilo of Corriedale, carded something, roving. I never know those names, you know. I have a list somewhere, but I ordered that. It was carded together from different tops. And so my plan was I take my Bosworth featherweight and spin that roving into a 3-ply for that Weisshot sweater, the wheatgrass truffle cardigan. And I was very excited about that. And I thought, well, if I spin like crazy and I have like 4 weeks, I think, I can do that. So I started and I sampled. And I found that it was really hard to make this specific yarn I wanted. I needed a sports weight to DK weight yarn. I wanted a 3-ply. I'm totally in love with 3-ply. I'm making everything 3-ply these days. And so I started spinning and I found it didn't go as fast as I had hoped. And while the fiber, I love the colors. It's called Indian Summer, the colorway, and it's really beautiful. But I had a hard time spinning it without being with knots and thick and thin spots, and so it was really. Oh, it took ages. So I started out spinning while watching the Tour de France. And I sat there for 4 hours. And in the end, I had like 10 grams, something like that. Took me ages. I thought my left arm would fall off because that's my fiber hand. I'm drafting with my right hand and managing the spindle, and the left hand holds the fiber. And when I'm spinning with the spindle, I always hold my hand up high over my head. I know you shouldn't do that, but that's how I learned. And usually that's not the problem, but when you spin 4 to 6 hours a day, yeah, your shoulder hurts. So I had a really hard time. I spun like crazy. I took the spindle project everywhere. I spun everywhere and I didn't spin anything else and I didn't knit a lot. And at the end of the Tour de Fleece, I had 170 grams of that yarn. 170 instead of 1,000. So, definitely not spinning a mile a day. I didn't know what to do. So that wasn't in the episode. But what I did in the end was I got so frustrated with my attempt to spin that particular fiber into that particular yarn that I just gave up on it. I took the rest of the fiber. I started spinning it on the wheel any which way. I'm making a 3-ply and it has thick and thin bits, and I think it's not my fault because I've met other people who have ordered the same fiber and they say they had a hard time spinning that consistently as well. So I just give up and say, okay, this is what the yarn wants to become. It's quite a bit thicker than the yarn I wanted to spin, and so I can't use those initial 170 grams for that sweater project. But that's okay, because 800 grams is about 2 pounds, and that will be plenty for cardigan or something. I still want to make the Weisshot sweater. I still want to spin it on a spindle, but I've grown a bit wiser in the process. I've ordered, 3 different types of fiber, and this time I only ordered like 4 ounces of each. I'll sample from those, and then I'll decide which fiber I'll use to make that cardigan. But that's a project that's somewhere in the future. I won't do that right now. I'm still in the process of spinning that. That's 2 pounds. Still not finished, but I'm getting there. I think I have like 500 grams. I have about a pound already plied. And I think about 200 to 300 grams yet to spin. But the way I'm spinning it right now on my wheel with pretty much long draw, any which way, thick and thin, I don't care. It goes real fast. Last time at the spinning meeting, I was there for like 4 or 5 hours. I spun about 200 grams.
Whoosh.
And that, of course, yeah, more fun than trying to micromanage it on my spindle. But I found out through that Tour de Fleece experiment where I tried to spin real fast on my spindle and I didn't succeed. In the end, that made me a much faster spindle spinner, because then when I picked up the spindle again and tried to spin the next thing, it all went like twice as fast as before. The project that really hit that home with me was that spinning for the Woolly Warmhead mystery, because all of a sudden I could spin 4 ounces in, I don't know, 4 days or so. Or maybe, I think it took me 3 days to spin that, not quite 3 days. And then the fourth day I applied it and then I was done. I did spin a lot those days. I find that, you know, I'm a music teacher, and often between students I have like 5 minutes here and 10 minutes there and sometimes like 30 minutes. And usually in those times I sit in front of my computer and read on Ravelry. And if I have a spindle project next to my computer and I spin a bit while reading, that makes a lot of difference in the productivity. It's really great. You should try it. Spindle spinning is so great. You can take it everywhere. You can, for the cost of a spinning wheel, you can buy a lot of spindles, really. Which doesn't mean I want to sell my spinning wheels. Not at all. But I'm so much in love with spindle spinning these days. It's crazy. So next episode was called Operation Turtleneck. That was the episode on that brown turtleneck sweater. I think I started that sweater in 2009, and that was my first attempt to make the perfect sweater that fits me just exactly like I need it. Yeah. So I made a swatch and another swatch and I think yet another. I washed the swatch, I blocked the swatch, I measured the swatch. I used a pattern from the, what's it called? Custom Knits book. The first one by Wendy Bernard. There's a turtleneck in there. It's called Tang. I chose a turtleneck because I used to wear turtlenecks all throughout the winter, lightweight turtlenecks. And I only had two of them and they were both old and ratty and not really fitting well. So I thought, okay, I'll get myself some Wollmeise sock yarn in that colorway, Ebenholz, that's ebony. It's a very dark brown, it's almost black. And I'll make myself a nice sweater. And the boringness of these miles and miles and miles of stockinette that I have to knit for that will be made easy by the nice Wollmeise yarn. And it worked in a way. So I started knitting that sweater. And I got a bit bored. So I put it aside and I knit another sweater. And then I got it out again. And then, you know, I started knitting it and I only did the math for, I don't know, the beginning. And then I knew I had to measure again, measure myself, calculate the whole thing through. So it sat there waiting for me to get out the tape measure and the calculator. Then I knit and I knit and then I sat there thinking, well, this looks really big. I know I've gained weight. I'm not teeny tiny, but this sweater looks really, really big. So I asked my husband, said, look at this. I think it's really, really big. Am I really that big? And he looked at that huge sweater and said, oh, looks all right to me. I was like, oh my God, I'm fat. Well, I knew that, but that fat. And I looked at the sweater and you know what? I finished the whole body before trying it on. That was a really, really dumb mistake. I tried it on and I found that even though I would have had like 10 centimeters more to knit and then the ribbing, I was already past the point where I should be. The thing was too long. So I just switched to the ribbing, knit, I don't know, a bit of ribbing, tried it on again, looked at it, and I knew it would grow in the wash because I had washed the swatches, and the whole thing was way too big, and it didn't fit at all. So you know what I did? I ripped back the whole body of that damn sweater. So I knit another sweater in the meantime. Then I pulled it out again. I had that whole big body of a sweater as a gauge swatch. So, excuse me. So I used that. I had measured it before ripping back. So that was a good thing. I did all the calculations again because that pattern, Tang, it's written for Malabrigo worsted. And I was knitting with fine fingering weight. So calculating the whole thing and started knitting again. And it took ages and it drove me crazy. And I knitted the deep brown thing and it never ended. But eventually I finished the body for the second time. Then I started the sleeves. So I started the first sleeve and I was knitting along. And I thought, well, this looks really baggy. Really baggy. And I don't think this works. This looks really baggy. So I knitted and knitted and knitted. And I thought, well, maybe I should try this on. Yeah, guess what? The sweater was too big. I had made a mistake when picking up the stitches because I had used my... usually when I pick up stitches for a button band, I pick up 2 stitches for every 3 rows. Well, if you do an afterthought sleeve like Wendy Bernard does, that doesn't work. If you do it like that way, you get too many stitches and it will get baggy. So I ripped back the sleeve and I picked up the stitches again and I knitted. And then at that point I got... Well, I was totally fed up with all that calculations, so I just eyeballed the decreases, I think. No. I calculated everything. Sorry. So I made all these decreases, and then I tried the sweater on again. At that point, I was a bit wiser, so I tried it on, looked at it, and thought, this doesn't work, and ripped back just to the point where the decreases started, because the sleeves are knitted from the top. It's totally seamless, the whole construction. I love the construction, by the way. But, well, if you don't really pay attention and you do your calculations wrong, it doesn't work. So that at that point, I was fed up with the calculation. That was the point where I thought, well, screw you. I just eyeball it. So I eyeballed it. I thought, well, I just decrease every 6th row. And then, oh yeah, this looks pretty white at a certain point. I just decrease every 4th row and it worked fine. Great. The sleeves, I have to say, are still pretty wide, but that's because my armhole is a bit too big. I didn't know what kind of fit I wanted. And in this kind of sweater construction, the armhole totally defines how wide the sleeve is. So if you don't want really big sleeves, you need to make the armhole pretty fitted. So they're not quite fitted enough. And then the other thing is that since I have very narrow shoulders and a really quite a big chest, I needed to increase. I cast on a lot of stitches under the arm holes for the body. And that those stitches made the whole sleeve really wide, and I don't need that width in my sleeves because my arms are quite narrow. It's just my boobs that are big. So that's why for that other sweater, that handspun merino one, I did it differently. I gained the width for the chest measurement, not by casting on more stitches under the arms, but I increased at the fronts of the cardigan. And then I did those short rows, so that fits way better. But I didn't know it back then. I just followed the formula. And the formula is fine. It's just when your shoulders are very narrow and your chest isn't, then you end up with wide sleeves. I didn't know that. So I made the first sleeve like 1.5 times, 3.5 times, sometimes. I ripped back and I knitted and I ripped back. The second sleeve went a bit more smoothly because I had made my notes, and so I just had to follow those. Then, what was it? Oh, yeah, the cuffs. I made the cuffs and I was all happy. And then I looked at the whole thing and thought, wait a minute. I did a 3x1 ribbing on the bottom of the sweater. And then I did 2x2 on the cuffs. And that didn't really look nice. I totally forgot about the 3x1 ribbing. I never do that. And I find it really hard to knit. I make a lot of mistakes when I do 3x1 ribbing because I'm so used to the 2x2. That's the one I always use on my socks. So I just go to knit, knit, purple, knit, knit, purple without thinking anything. So when I try to do a 3x1 rib, I have to pay attention like crazy, so I don't do 2x2 or 1x1. So I had to rip back both the cuffs. I thought about leaving the 2x2 rib, but it really didn't look good with the ribbing at the bottom of the sweater. So then I made the turtleneck. And since I had just ripped back both the sleeves, I managed to remember that I was supposed to do a 3x1 rib for the turtleneck. I picked up all the stitches, which is, dark, dark, dark brown yarn. Yeah, it's best to get a spotlight that shines right on your work when you're working on something like that. So I picked up all the stitches and I knit my turtleneck, and then at a certain point I tried it on to see if I wanted yet more turtleneck or not. And I looked at it and it was fine, and then I finished the turtleneck, and then I tried the sweater on, and I think, well, this is weird. You know, 2x2 rib doesn't really have a wrong and a right side because it's 2x2 on both sides. 3x1 rib has a right and a wrong side. And I did the 3x1 exactly as noted in the instructions. With the right side facing, I picked everything up and then I did 3 knits and 1 purl. If you do that, everything's fine. But then you don't leave the turtleneck, but you fold it over. So what you see in the end is the wrong side of the turtleneck, not the right side. So I sat there and I had knit this whole turtleneck and I was totally sick of this whole sweater and I hated it, but I had knit it wrong side out. Well, so I thought, so what shall I do now? I said, you know what? I'll just do surgery. So I put a circular needle through the first row of stitches all around the neck. Then I left one row between, and then I put another circular through the next row of stitches all around the turtleneck. Then I snipped a stitch. And my plan was, I'll snip it I'll turn the turtleneck inside out and then I'll sew it on again. The plan was good. Sorry. The plan was excellent, only when I did it, I wasn't careful enough. And that first row of stitches wasn't the first row of stitches. In some places, it was the row below the first row of stitches. And in that turtleneck, that was like part of the shoulders. And I didn't know how many stitches I had picked up there. And it totally went wonky. So next time I try something like that, I'll do it more slowly with better light and I'll check it. Because I tend to miss the next stitch. When I'm trying to pull something through a row of stitches, I often think, and especially if it's in purl, I have no problem when I do that in knits, with all knit stitches. But with the purls, I sometimes miss the right row and go one below. Yeah. So I totally screwed that up. So I had to rip back the turtleneck and had to knit it all again in 3 purl, 1 knit. Though I have to say, while I picked up from the right side, and then turned the whole thing around and knit it inside out because I couldn't stand to do a 3 purl, 1 knit ribbing. Yeah. So I finished the turtleneck and it took me more than a year. And I have to say that for about half of that, I hated that sweater. It fits very well apart from the sleeves. And I thought I'd wear it a lot, but then, well, this winter was exceptionally warm, so I didn't wear a lot of wool anyways. And then there was this whole issue with me getting all itchy from the wool. So we'll see. I think I got a lot of wear of it, but I still have these bad associations from knitting that thing for, I don't know, 15 months or so. Whoa. Yeah, but it's finished, and since then I've finished yet another sweater, so everything's fine. So, next episode was all about the sweaters again. It was called It Isn't You, It's the Sweater. And in that episode, I talked a bit about how to make a sweater fit you and why you can't really take a commercial pattern and think it will fit you as is, unless you have a certain kind of body that fits the standard. You know, the thing with the hand knits is that if you use commercial patterns, the fit will be, well, the same as store-bought sweaters, usually. Because the designer can't know what kind of figure you have because people are so different. You can have narrow shoulders and broad shoulders and big boobs and small boobs and lots of waist and like me, I have very narrow shoulders. I have big boobs. I have a small waist. I have enormous hips. Usually when I buy clothes in a store, I have to buy my buttons, like pants, have to be 2 sizes bigger than what I'm wearing on top. And that's for things like t-shirts that stretch. And if I buy something like a blouse, I have a hard time getting something that fits because it doesn't stretch. And so it's always too wide at the shoulders. So of course, when I knit something, I love following patterns, really, because I don't really have to think. I can just do, okay, it says cast on 200 stitches, knit for 6 inches. But then I can't blame the designer if the sweater doesn't fit me. So I talked a bit about that and what you can do to make something fit better and why it's worth to it to put a bit of thought into it at the front instead of ripping the sweater back or knitting it and then not wearing it, which is just sad. And I was talking a lot about gauge swatches because most people, and me too, don't like doing them because, you know, you have this grand idea. You want the sweater now, so you want to start it. And then you think, oh, yeah, now I have to knit a gauge swatch and then another one and then block it. And that takes ages. And I could be like halfway into the body of the sweater by now. Well, you could. And then you could rip it all back when you see that it doesn't fit. A lot of yarns change a lot when you wash them, especially superwash. That might give you one size bigger than what you knit just by making it wet and washing it and then laying it flat. So I've learned the hard way to always make a swatch and to make a swatch in at least two needle sizes and wash the swatch and then, yeah, whatever. I don't usually block my swatches. I just wash them and then let them dry flat so that at the end when it doesn't grow as much as I thought it would, I can still block a bit out of it. And also it makes the process of washing my sweaters way easier if I don't have to pin hundreds of needles into them, but I just can wash them, lay them flat, let them dry, and everything's fine. Well, it depends. I'm currently knitting a lace sweater, so letting that dry flat, it would work, but it wouldn't look as good as really blocking it. So that was my episode about, how it isn't you, it's the sweater. And then the last episode before this was about spinning fiber. I called it "What is this thing I'm spinning?" Well, I won't repeat it all here, but I have to say that information for spinners in German is a bit hard to come by. There's a spinning guild in Germany which I can really recommend, but we don't have as many spinning shops, spinning teachers, and especially spinning books as people have in the US. It's clear the market's may bigger for spinning books in English, especially since everybody I know who's German also buys American spinning books. So people were asking me about different fibers and different preparations. I won't really go into the preparations. There are tons of books that you can find that in. I used Start Spinning, I think, by Maggie Casey. I used The Intentional Spinner. And what's that book called? By Amy King. I have no idea, but I will link it in the show notes, I guess. So I was telling people about Top and Roving and Sliver, and I have notes somewhere, but I can never get it straight. And then I told a bit about different sheep breeds because somebody was asking me about that. So I told a bit about Merino and Blue-Faced Leicester and what I've spun and Corriedale and things like that. Because that as well is information that's not easy to come by. And the thing that I'm really missing is I don't have any idea about German sheep. It's a bit funny. I'm sitting here in Germany and I'm spinning Merino from New Zealand and Blue-Faced Leicester from, I think, Great Britain. And, you know, it's not as if we don't have sheep here. On the other hand, all the kinds of fiber that I've spun that are German, Like there's something called Eiderwolle. That's, as far as I know, it's fiber from sheep that are kept for milk mostly. And they have to be shorn regardless, and that fiber gets processed. It's quite coarse. It has a lot of lanolin. It's, I don't know, staple length. I'm guessing here is about, I don't know, 2 inches, 5 centimeters, 6, something like that. And it's scratchy. And as I said, I'm particularly sensitive to the scratchiness of wool at the moment. So I tend to avoid everything that's really German. Even German merino are scratchier than those New Zealand merinos. What else? I have had Coburger Fuchsschaf. That has, it's also quite itchy. But then I'm totally sensitive. I know people who love these fibers and use them all the time. And but I don't. So I'm still. But I had that whole episode on spinning fiber. So for the people who can't really find that information anywhere in German. But since you able to understand English, you can find that with, well, not a lot of trouble. So that was my, well, basically that was what I had been talking about in those 9 podcast episodes. Other things that I talked about were, I started backstrap weaving. I wanted to do that forever, and I had my broom handle sewn into 3 pieces forever. But then I think I started in the summer, and I'm very happy with it. And I have been wanting to warp my loom again soon. But that's one of the things that gets pushed back all the time when I don't have a lot of time. No warping. But I love it, and I think that the backstrap loom is more versatile than people think. I just bought myself 2 rigid heddles for it, so I'm pretty excited. I'll try to do some plain weave on it. I also started making bread by the no knead bread recipe thing. Probably everybody else on the planet has made this. It's really easy. It tastes marvelous. The only thing that keeps me from making it every day is that I need 2 days, one after the other, to make it. So one day I make the dough, and then the next day I have to have time to bake it. And that has been a big stumbling block for me. So I often have days where I think, okay, I could make the dough today, but tomorrow in the evening I don't have any time to bake bread. So yeah, it gets pushed back as well. But I love it. It tastes good. It's really, really easy. Great. Then I started, I'm all do it yourself here. I started making my own deodorant. My skin, as I said, is quite sensitive, and so I have a hard time with deodorants as well. And there was only ever like one brand that I could use without getting a rash and itching and feeling horrible and my skin peeling. And that deodorant made stains in my t-shirts. So every t-shirt I own, after about 6 to 8 months of wear, has a nice little white heart. It's not so much a stain as it's like, it feels like somebody inserted a flat stone into your t-shirt. So there is white gunk in the fabric, and you can't get that out through washing. I tried a deodorant remover. Doesn't help at all. So for month and month and month, you don't see anything. And then all of a sudden, it's like, boom. And then basically, you can throw away the t-shirt. every time you, it scratches because it's hard. Every time you lift your arm, you have like this stain. And you stink because that stain holds the smell of the sweat. Nice. So, but I really need to use deodorant because otherwise I stink in about an hour or two. So I didn't know what to do. I tried different other brands like Veleda Deo or what else? There's this crystal thing. Oh, that was fun. I tried it once. My armpits hurt like hell and were totally itchy and red by, I don't know, 8 hours later. I couldn't stand it. I can't use anything with alcohol, so that Veleda was out. And then a friend, a spinning friend again, she said, why don't you make your own? What? Making my own deodorant? Are you crazy? Well, I like doing things with my hands, but you really, there's no. And then I found out making your own deodorant is really, really, really easy. What you need is baking soda, arrowroot powder, essential oil, and coconut oil. And if I recall correctly, it's like three parts baking soda and three parts arrowroot powder and four parts coconut oil and then like 10 drops of essential oil. And you just mix it in a bowl with a fork. And basically you just do like, I don't know, two or three tablespoons full of the baking soda and the arrowroot powder, and you mix it together, and then you just put coconut oil in there for and mix it with a fork, which is a bit hard to do at the first, especially in the winter when the coconut oil is totally solid. But you can just put it on the heater, and then it'll melt. And yeah, and then you just put in coconut oil until you like the consistent the texture. And that's it. I started doing that in September. It works perfectly. When it's really hot and I'm sweating a lot, I might have to reapply deodorant after a few hours. But I used to have to do that with the regular commercial deodorant as well. I keep it in a, I don't know, I have a jar with a lid, and you take some out with your finger and it melts when you apply it. It's totally easy. So far, I haven't seen any stains, but I have only used this since September. So that's like September, October, November, December, January, February. That's like 6 months. We'll see. But I think it's really working well. I love it. I don't have a rash. It's perfect. Yeah. And there's no aluminum in there. So what else? I've sewn as well. I cut out all the pieces for a skirt in August, I think. Well, still no skirt. I get there eventually, but I made a mistake in the cutting out, and that means I have to fiddle around with the whole thing and maybe cut out a new waistband, because the one I now have doesn't really fit, and I don't want to do that, and that's why it's been sitting on top of my dresser for a month. And only now I'm realizing that on the last episode I promised to tell you about how I learned to speak English so well. I think I'll leave that for the next English episode, because this one's already 2 hours. Yeah. I'm hoping that I'll do more frequent podcasts this year, and maybe not quite as long. So I hope that you don't have to wait for the next English episode for more than a year again, but that I'll have it ready for, I don't know, maybe in the fall or something. Thanks for all the feedback I got on the first English episode, and I found that quite a few people contacted me and said that they had had German lessons in school and they used my podcast to brush up their German. So that was really nice. I wouldn't have thought that anybody would try that. But of course, if you already know the language a bit and you know a lot about the topic, and you like knitting podcasts anyway, so whatever works. Yeah. So you can find me on my blog, which is creativemother.de. You can send me an email under creativemother@web.de. I'm on Reverie as Creative Mother again, and I'm on Twitter as Free Jazz Mama because the name Creative Mother was already taken. So I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope to do more frequent and possibly shorter podcasts in the future. And I wish you all happy knitting. Bye.